And so here in Matthew chapter 12, Jesus is dealing with the Pharisees here with the issue concerning the Sabbath, because Christ did not hesitate to heal individuals on the Sabbath. But the Pharisees were, if you know much about them, excuse me, they were well known to ridicule Christ for doing anything on the Sabbath. And then he would also, in return, basically call out their hypocrisy for it. So looking at Matthew 12, beginning in verse 1, here the Bible says, "At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath, and his disciples were hungry, and began to pluck heads of grain and to eat. And when the Pharisees saw it, they said to him, 'Look, your disciples are doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath.'" Now, what's happening here is they're eating. They're plucking heads of grain. Now, what's happening is they're literally just plucking off the heads of grain off the wheat. This is something that really, for most of us, in our minds, you think, that's not work. But the Pharisees here are going after Christ. They're saying, look, they're doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath. There in Matthew 12 and verse 2. This is an example of the yoke that's mentioned in the previous chapter on the people, because the Pharisees were well known for binding things on people that they themselves wouldn't do. We know we find examples of that, I think, in every area today. I don't care if you're talking about in a religious sense or you're talking about those in political world who try to bind things on people and they themselves don't even do it. You look at Matthew 12, verse 2 here, we find that the Pharisees, like they always do, are looking for a violation. The word here, as the King James says, "behold" or "lo," shows that these Pharisees pretended to be horrified at what Jesus was allowing his disciples to do, but secretly they were glad because they thought they had something against Jesus. And so they were always looking for something against him. Think about this for a moment. Think about that mindset. All they did was try to find something to which to accuse Christ. They, to such a degree, they ignored his teachings, unless they, and what I mean by that is, when they listened to his teachings, they were only listening to try to find something in which they could accuse him. Remember when he talks about being the Son of God, they say he blasphemes. When he healed people, they say he did it by the power of the devil. These guys are incredible. But what's sad is that we still see some people today who act just like them, who when they hear a sound Bible class teacher or a solid gospel preacher teaching or preaching, that they don't hear the lesson. All they're looking is for some way to try to twist what they have said. Looking with me there in verse 3 of Matthew 12. "But he said to them, 'Have you not read what David did when he was hungry, and he and those who were with him? How he entered the house of God, excuse me, and ate the showbread, which was not lawful for him to eat, nor for those who were with him, but only for the priest.'" And so this is his first argument, and this is how I have it here. This was not done out of hunger there, or excuse me, this was done out of hunger there in verse 2. It was not an excuse to violate the law, but simply the reason stated. He just gives a reason. "The law commanded that 12 loaves be laid on the table in the holy place to remain a week and then be eaten by the priest only." If you look at verse 4 here, he says, "How he entered into the house of God and did eat the showbread, which is not lawful for him to eat, nor for those who are with him, but only for the priest." The Pharisees, what Christ is saying here is the Pharisees are approved of what David did. They approved of this Sabbath breaking. This does not mean that the divine law submissive to the human needs. They can be broken without sin for adequate cause. That's not what we're talking about here. If a Christian may violate law when its observance involves hardship and suffering, then there will be an end to suffering for the name of Christ, even to the end, to the degree of self-denial. Now, what Christ is doing here, he's not trying to justify what the disciples are doing because David did something back in the Old Testament time period or back during his life. What he's saying here is, what he's doing, he's showing their hypocrisy. He's saying, you're condemning the disciples, but you're not condemning David. That's what he's doing here. He's saying that, look, you can't condemn us and not condemn David. You're being hypocritical. He's not trying to say, well, David did it, so we're okay. That's not what he's doing. He's saying you're hypocritical. You won't dare condemn David. Oh, but you'll condemn my disciples. We see that still today in various ways. People acting those same ways. They'll condemn people for something that maybe they even themselves have done. I've seen individuals try to condemn members of the church for not addressing a situation while they themselves have been there the whole entire time and never once tried to address that situation. So they try to cast blame on someone else. Now, we look here now in verse 4, verse 5, the second argument, as I have it here, he says, or, which says that he's beginning now another argument, or have you not read in the law that on the Sabbath, the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are blameless? Yet I say to you that in this place, there is one greater than the temple. Now, in verse 5 and 6 here, an exception is made for the priests who did their work on the Sabbath. What is this lesson? Is that just as a priest served the temple on the Sabbath and were guiltless, his disciples might also serve Christ, the greater temple, without blame? And so what he's saying here is, look, the priests were blameless because they were serving God on the Sabbath day, so they weren't held as being doing something sinful on the Sabbath day because they're serving God. They need to eat, and so what happens? They can do this on the Sabbath day because they're priests. They have this privilege, or not privilege here, or to use a term here as I had here, an exception. Now, if they were not priests, or if for some reason they were not serving on the Sabbath, they couldn't do that, could they? Now, what he points out here in verse 5, he says, or have you not read that verse 6? Yet I say to you that there's one greater than the temple. Now, they're serving the temple, and they're allowed to violate the Sabbath, right, and be blameless. He's saying, but I'm greater than the temple, but you're going to blame the disciples for eating grain while they're serving me. So his point is, the disciples are serving me, and so are they exempt? They have this exemption to the degree of being able to eat, right? Now, keep in mind, what are they doing? They're not going to some great elaborate detail or great elaborate effort to prepare this big meal. They're literally just plucking heads of grain as they walk through the field. They're not even stopping. Why? Because they're wanting something to eat. That's how very little it is. While they're serving Christ. He says if the priest can do it on the Sabbath and be blameless, these men can do it on the Sabbath because they're serving me and I'm greater than the temple. Verse 6. Looking at verse 7. But if you had known what if you had known what this means, I desire mercy and not sacrifice, you would have not condemned the guiltless. Now he's saying here, if you had known this phrase, if you had understood it, and that phrase is, I desire mercy, not sacrifice, he says you would not have condemned the guiltless. The guiltless are the disciples. I mean, they have no guilt. They're not guilty of anything. And the reason he says they wouldn't have done this, he says, if they had really understood the phrase, I desire mercy and not sacrifice. And this is a quotation from Hosea 6 and verse 6. This is not reputing sacrifices, many of which were commanded by the Lord, but a Hebrew way of saying, I prefer mercy, benevolence, and kindness to sacrifice. And so it's not a way of saying to do away with sacrifices. It's that the Lord prefers what? He prefers benevolence and kindness. Guiltless here in verse 4, or verse 7 rather, means there is no real grounds against them. If they're guiltless, it's not there's no real grounds against them. It's that there are no grounds against them. They're serving me. Yes, they can pluck, this grain. Back in verse 1. Pluck heads of grain to eat. Now, notice here in verse 2. Verse 1. They went through the grain fields on the Sabbath, and his disciples were hungry and began to pluck heads of grain and to eat. Well, they weren't. It seems to me they weren't even stopping. It's just like they're walking through the field, and they're just as they're going. Well, why is that? The whole reason behind it is because they're serving the Lord. They didn't have the ability to stop and to prepare for the Sabbath day because they're serving the Lord. They didn't have the time to prepare on Friday, which started being the Sabbath, and the next day be able to enjoy food without actually in intense labor, right? But also notice here in verse 8, he says, "The Son of Man is Lord, even of the Sabbath," there in verse 8. Now, he is Lord even the Sabbath. After all, he created it. that some man has the authority to declare what is right and wrong. In reality, that's the end of it. If Christ says they're doing nothing wrong, then they're doing nothing wrong. And that's what he's saying. He's saying, these men are serving me. And what he's saying, because of that, they're doing nothing wrong. Doesn't mean everybody else can go out and start eating and doing all this stuff. No, because they're not actively following Christ in the sense of what these individuals are doing. They're literally following him wherever they're going, right? And so that is why they're doing this. The reason why they're doing this is because they're following Christ. Why were the priests eating there in the, was it back in verse 5? He says, have you not read in the law on the Sabbath, the priests in the temple profane the Sabbath and are blameless, which means they didn't keep the law of the Sabbath on, or they profaned it and are blameless. Why? Because they were eating. Why is that? Because, and the reason why they're eating is because they're still, they're laboring on the Sabbath. They have to. They won't just starve. No. And they are exempt. But today there are those who say, well, if they can do it, then it's okay for us to do it. No, it's not. It wasn't okay for them in Christ's time, for others who were not doing this, who were not following him literally, who were not serving in the temple, who were not priests. If they weren't priests or they weren't following Christ like his disciples are here, literally following him physically, different places, then what? They better keep the Sabbath. Now, looking at verse 9, and this, to me, the Pharisees start here, and they start to stretch, and then we find they keep, stretch is a bad way to look at it, they keep reaching. They reach over here, okay, they're violating the Sabbath because they're plucking heads of grain. Oh, that didn't work. Okay, we're going to reach over here for this. We're going to reach over here for this. They keep reaching for things, and it's like, how we hear about there in Ecclesiastes, it's like grasping for the wind. They can't find anything to try to pin on Christ. They keep trying, but they're not able to do so. Now, look here with me at verse 9. Now, in verses 9 through 14, this same section can be found in Mark 3, 1 through 6, and also Luke 6, 6 through 11. So in verse 9 following, we have here, and some include this in the fourth argument, but we're going to keep reading here, and some actually just call this an additional argument. But looking at verses 9 through 14, excuse me, now when he, excuse me, when he had departed from there, he went into their synagogue, and behold, there was a man with a withered hand. And they asked him, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath, that they might accuse him? Now, look again at that last phrase in verse 10. What was their motives? Their motive was to condemn Christ. Now, the Bible tells us he had departed from where he was before, in verses 1 through 8. So he's left there. Now he's in the synagogue. He's got a pretty good audience, right, if he's in the synagogue. The Bible tells us there was a man who had a withered hand there in verse 10. Now, the withered hand, some say perhaps is a form of palsy. In all reality, why his hand was withered in this situation, it doesn't even matter. Because the point of it here is not a part of verse 10 when they ask him, saying, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? Now, their intent is one that's wicked. They want to condemn him. They're not saying, hey, is it lawful? Because we really want to know if it's okay that this is done. Well, first of all, Christ has healed people on the Sabbath already. He would continue to heal people on the Sabbath. Excuse me. On the Sabbath. And so when they ask this question, the Bible says in verse 10 that they might accuse him. That really reveals to you the condition of their heart. They weren't seekers of truth. They weren't honest. They weren't upright. You remember the Pharisees, they were supposed to be those who, in their mind, at least in their mind, they were supposed to be spiritual leaders. Well, here is the Son of God, and they don't even recognize him. And what do? They accuse him of things, repeatedly accuse him of things. These are guys who tell everybody that, look, we're very knowledgeable. We know all about the Old Testament. They know all about the Scriptures. And we're going to bind all these other things on you as well, but we're not going to keep them. And, oh, here's a man who people are claiming he's the Son of God, who, and now this is not them speaking, who has done all these things to prove he's the Son of God. But these wise men over here are going to deny him, and they're going to keep trapping him, or trying to. And what happens is they really set it up so that everybody can see he's not doing anything wrong. Look at verse 11. Then he said to them, this being Christ speaking, what man is there among you? And notice this. This is such a great example. What he does, he points out the hypocrisy. Because the question, by Christ's response in verse 11, shows you the ridiculousness of their question in verse 10. He says, what man is there among you? He has one sheep, and if it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will not lay hold of it and lift it out. Now he's saying, he says here, which one of you, if you had a sheep fall into a ditch, and it could be anything, any animal of yours, if it fell into a ditch, and would you not pull it out, even on the Sabbath? And what is he saying? He's saying, if it's okay for you to pull an animal out of the pit, because it doesn't become injured, well, he says, then basically that answers the question, doesn't it? If you can do that, is it lawful to heal a man, a human being, on the Sabbath? Look at verse 12. How much more value then is a man than a sheep? He's saying, which one is more important, this human being or an animal? Now, don't get me wrong, people, I have nothing, you know, I'm against mistreatment of animals, you know, having pets of our own and those types of things, but they're not human beings. You know, if we have something, if my daughter is sick and the cat is sick, my daughter gets priority always, right? And what we find here in verse 12, this is a question that Christ is asking them of how much more value than is a man than a sheep. How much more important is a human being than a sheep? That's the question he's asking him. Therefore, he says, and the result is what? Well, they can't say, well, the sheep is more important, because they'll look ridiculous. Well, they already are. They look ridiculous. And so he says here in verse 12, what does he say? Therefore, it is lawful. And notice this, he doesn't say to heal a man, but notice what he uses here. To do good on the Sabbath. He goes past the idea of healing. He says it's lawful to do good. It's lawful to do healings and do whatever is good on the Sabbath. It's never unlawful to do good. If it's okay to pull a sheep out, and this man is much more valuable than a sheep, they can't argue that point. And he says what? It's definitely lawful to do good on the Sabbath day. Now, looking at verse 13, then he said to the man, he doesn't just say that. He also does it. He heals the man. Verse 13. Then he said to the man, stretch out your hand, and he stretched it out, and it was restored as whole as the other. Now notice this, he heals the man, right? You ask a question, he gives an example, you know, he applies it, right? There in verse 12, verse 11, it's the example, verse 12, he applies it. Verse 13, he heals the man, and what happens? Verse 14, the Pharisees repented and rejoiced? No. Look at verse 14, the Pharisees went out and plotted against him, how they might destroy him. Ridiculous. A ridiculous response. But isn't it true today that we have people who respond in a similar way? People who will respond in the way that when they hear the truth, they get upset. I remember, you know, when we have our food pantry, which our food pantry is, we have a Bible class, and then we have two bags of food for each visitor, and they're able to take that with them when they leave. And during one of the Bible classes I taught, this has been a couple of years ago, but one of the ladies who was there asked, you know, we were talking about marriage and divorce, and I don't remember what I was talking about, how we even got to the topic, if that was my purpose, if we were just covering a text, I don't remember. But her question was, what about a person who's, I think it was her daughter. And so it becomes very personal, right? And so for some people, when things get personal, they want to make excuses for doing things that are not right. Now, she said, well, my daughter, you know, her husband abuses her. Is it not lawful for her to divorce him? And I said, what does the Bible say? Because we're there in Matthew 19. And, we read that. And we explain, we talk about what that word fornication meant, which means sexual unfaithfulness, right? Not sexual morality, not immorality, but fornication. And so I said, well, if you have in those types of situations, which is interesting, because, and I know those situations exist, but many times there's a whole lot more to it than just a someone abusing. And sometimes their idea of some people's idea of abuse is different from everybody's from our idea of abuse. When I think abuse, I think someone is abusing someone physically, mentally. They're abusing them, in a sexual way. Something of that nature. And for some people, when they hear abuse, they think, well, they're abusing me because I don't get to go out and shop like I would like to. They're abusing me because I don't get to go out every weekend and drink like I want to. And so they think, well, they're being abused. They're being hindered in some way. And so we have to first realize and seek out the truth of everything and make sure that that really is the case, that there is abuse that's taking place. And when I told her, I said, well, the first thing I would do was seek godly advice, and because she's not a Christian. And I said, and I would pray about it, and I would find someone who is a Christian counselor, and I would encourage counseling so that if there is abuse taking place, you can remedy that. And I just quoted again Matthew 19:9. And she rolled her eyes. She got upset. that was her response. Isn't that what the Pharisees are doing in verse 14? They ask a question. Christ answers it. He illustrates. He answers it through illustration. Then he applies it, and then he heals the man. And what do they do? Verse 14. They went out and plotted against him. The truth has to remain the truth, no matter who we're talking about. We're talking about family, friends, strangers. The truth has to remain the truth. And when people talk about these types of situations, like, well, what if someone's abusive? They want to forget all about that phrase fornication. And I tell people this. I've said this before. I'm not sure if I said it in our setting in this program, but just because fornication is the only reason for divorce. If fornication occurs, it doesn't mean that you have to divorce that person. The theme of the Bible, if you think about it, overwhelmingly is reconciliation. You think it's any different with a marriage bond, where there's pain, where there's heartache, where there's difficulties, that God does not want us to be reconciled? I mean, look at the book of Malachi. The Bible tells us that God hates divorce, and people talk about that, and they say, well, see, I know God hates divorce, and they forget all about Matthew 19. And all the times, other times Christ talks about divorce, or when the Apostle Paul talks about divorce, they want to forget all about that. Well, we find, though, why did God there in the book of Malachi say he hates divorce? He says because it covers one's garment in violence. That is a way to talk about sin. He says that whenever divorce is involved, there's always sin involved. And he's exactly right. If it's sin, if a divorce happens for a scriptural reason, there's sin involved. If divorce happens for an unscriptural reason, there's sin involved. Thus, he says he hates divorce because it covers one's garment in violence. Okay, now we're going to go ahead and stop there this morning. We have just a few more minutes. We have about 5 more minutes here, if I'm correct. We're going to look at verses 15 and following here in Matthew chapter 12. In Matthew chapter 12, beginning in verse 15, and this is if we really got to read verse 14 to 15 together. Then the Pharisees went out and plotted against him how they might destroy him. Verse 15, and when Jesus knew it, he withdrew from there, and in great multitudes followed him, and he healed them all. Now think about this for a second. The Pharisees come to him accusing the disciples of sin because they're eating grain of the harvest. He corrects them on that. He goes in the synagogue. It seems that they follow him, or some are there waiting for him or something. And there's a man there needing healing, and they ask a question, is lawful to heal a man on the Sabbath? He illustrates it. He answers it. He applies it. He heals the man. They hate him. They get angry. Verse 14, they leave. Verse 15, Jesus knew that. How he knew that? Maybe he heard him talk about it. Maybe because he's the Son of God, so he perceived it. Either way, he knew it. The Bible says he withdrew from there. Now, keep in mind, he didn't withdraw because he thought they could overwhelm him and put him to death before his time. No. He just left. Other places to go. All right? And the Bible says, and great multitudes followed him, which means there was crowds following Christ. Notice this. And he healed them all. What did he heal them of? Whatever disease and illness or infirmity they had. Verse 16, yet he warned them not to make him known, that it might be fulfilled which is spoken by Isaiah the prophet. Now, he warned them not to make him known, but in reality, they didn't have to say anything, because when someone is healed, if you have someone who's on death's doorstep and they're perfectly well the next day after going and seeing Christ, the only thing that changed is they went and saw Christ. Logic says something happened. Now, he warned them not to make him known. Verse 17, this is what? To fulfill prophecy, that it might be fulfilled, which is spoken by Isaiah the prophet. Behold, my servant whom I have chosen, my beloved in whom my soul is well pleased. And this is from Isaiah 42, 1 through 4. I will put my spirit upon him. He will declare justice to the Gentiles. Has he done that? Yes. Is he teaching and preaching? Yes. And he says, he will not quarrel nor cry out, nor will anyone hear his voice in the streets. A bruised reed he will not break, and smoking flax he will not quench. Now, you go back to verse 15, why did Christ withdraw himself? Because he wasn't looking for a fight. I mean, the fight comes to him anyway, but he doesn't look for the fight, right? He does not quarrel, verse 19, nor cry out. Nor will anyone hear his voice in the streets, which means you're not going to hear him out there arguing with people. Now, does he get upset? Oh, absolutely. But does he just quarrel all the time? Does he, I'll say quarrel all the time. He doesn't quarrel. He disagrees with people, and he calls them out on their sin. A bruised reed he will not break, and smoking flax he will not quench, till he sends forth justice to victory. And I like that phrase, sends forth justice to victory. A bruised reed is a symbol of a soul broken and contrite on account of sin. Christ will be forgiving, not cruel and severe. You can look at Matthew 11, 28 through 30. His treatment of his people, who are the weakest and least alive, so to speak, is marked by long-suffering and gentleness. Smoking flax indicates it will not cause the lamp to go out. He will help. So he sent forth just judgment, or as the New King James says here, justice unto victory. Judgment means the truth or the gospel. When the gospel is sent forth, indeed, it will be victorious. 21, and in his name, Gentiles will trust. Christianity is meant for the Gentiles too, so the Gentiles have hope also. Trust is literally hope in the New Testament. And so in him they will trust, or in him they will have hope. Okay, we're going to stop there now because this next section, we won't be able to deal with it the way I would like in the time we have remaining. And so next time when we come back, we will pick up in Matthew chapter 12 and verse 22. Some have this heading, Jesus is charged with casting out demons by Beelzebub, or a house divided cannot stand. The idea there being, this is the occasion where he would heal individuals by casting out demons. And who would come? Verse 24, well, here come the Pharisees. He does it by the power of Satan. These guys, they're so ridiculous. You can't. It's too pathetic to make it up, right? How sad it is. Okay, we're going to stop there today. I do thank you for being here with me. I hope you have enjoyed this Bible study. Hope you join me again next time when we pick back up in Matthew chapter 12 and verse 22. I hope to see you again next week.